people, good day, good evening, good night, wherever you're connecting from in this beautiful, wonderful world. Welcome to the Sunside Kingdom Show. Season 2, we're here. I have a very special guest with me today. We're just soaking up the view outside. We're on the sunny side of the kingdom. It's beautiful, amazing, even though they say it was supposed to be some weather, but the weather is still far away. I'm here. We're excited. I have with me Melissa Gums. I'll get into those details in a while. We'll go sit down and be a bit tranquilo, make sure that the wind isn't like disturbing all the audio. But we had to show you guys the view, man.
People,
welcome to the Sunside Kingdom Show. So, how should I introduce my next guest? In my brief interactions and experiences and seeing from afar and sometimes close, I would say there's also a very high level of integrity. She has touched various industries throughout her career, from hospitality right here on St. Martin, as well as trust and finance in the Netherlands, as well as telecoms here on St. Martin again. And now for the previous 4 years, by the time you'll see in this, it's probably going to be a little bit more than four. Mm-hmm. In the political arena as well here in St. Martin. The founder, can I say that? Founder of the Party for Progress.
One of the co-founders.
Of the Party for Progress. And spearheading a new generation of political movements, as well as, yeah, let me leave that part out. Let's welcome Melissa Gums.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Happy to be, you know, a guest on the podcast. I've been seeing on LinkedIn it pop up every now and then, like, oh, when am I going to be on it? But no, thank you for having me and for the invitation to be here. Yeah.
Great. So we love to start off with digging back in the crates and understanding what were some of the early childhood experiences that helped shape the person. Mm-hmm. So if we go back into those crates, then where were you born?
I was born right here on sunny St. Martin, St. Rose Hospital. I think, you know.
High five on that.
The original. The originals. As they like to say, I'm in my neighbor Springberry Hill. Uh-huh. But yeah, born right here on St. Martin at St. Rose, you know, September 4th. Peak of the hurricane season, but luckily that year there was no hurricane. I was the hurricane.
Yeah, you was the hurricane. Watch out now.
But no, so born and raised right here. Grew up in South Reward my whole life. Attended school in South Reward my whole life, from Jolly Dwarf to, well, first of all, Ann and Andy, which I don't think that even exists anymore. Then Jolly Dwarf, then St. Dominic Primary. And yeah, one of the first experimental batches of St. Dominic High School classes, I would say. Yeah. I think we were the second graduating class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's... that's been, you know, my life. And then did a year at USM after graduating high school, and then transferred out to St. Thomas University, a private Catholic university in Miami, Florida.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, did my bachelor's and master's there.
Wait, St. Yeah. Thomas University? Yeah. So it's not in St. Thomas?
No, it's St. Thomas. It's named after St. Thomas Aquinas. It was a saint.
Oh, cool.
That was the oof. I hope they don't see this because they're gonna. So we quizzed you on this. They did, but basically the order of priests, essentially that was their patron. Mm-hmm. That started the university and such. And spent 5 years there in Miami, involved in student government. So maybe that was a foreshadowing for what was to come.
Yeah,
was a student senator.
Student government in Miami.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, was instrumental in addressing student concerns on campus. And if anyone has ever lived on a U.S. college campus, you know, there's a lot of concerns to be addressed from as small as the food not tasting good, which I think is every school, to larger issues that students may have with professors and other items like that. So, yeah, and then spent that time in Miami, did my bachelor's in business management. And then for my master's, I focused on international business with a focus on international communications.
So where did you do your master's?
Same school.
Okay.
Yeah. So I said, you know, where I liked the program. It was what I wanted to get into. It didn't just center on just business. It was more about how do you deal with global business, you know, and as that back then, the world was just starting to shrink even more. You know, let me put it this way to kind of date myself. I joined Facebook when you still needed a .edu address to join Facebook.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
So one of the early, members of that particular social media.
But you were in college when...
Yeah, I was. it was quite a while ago. So I did that... and that experience, you know, doing my master's in that particular field really also kind of sparked the interest in politics and just geopolitics in general. A lot of people are...
So was there any, before that point, was there any sort of feeling, affinity for the politics?
Absolutely not.
No. So it was one of those classic things where what my parents are doing, I'm not interested in until
later. So my dad, well, everybody knows my dad entered politics the year I was born, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yes, a few months prior to me being born is his first election. Then he was called up to be an observer because back then we were preparing for Aruba to leave the Netherlands Antilles.
Oh, yeah.
So they were letting St. Martin, Saba, Station, etc. take observers to the parliament to the Netherlands Antilles so that... you know, we would get accustomed to being represented on that scale with more than just the one that we had in parliament.
So back then we only had one representative.
With Aruba leaving the Netherlands Antilles, the seats would reshuffle. How we ended. I think we ended up with three, Saba, Station, two or one. Yeah. So my dad was an observer first. And so from a very young age, I was exposed to our political arena on St. Martin, having seen whether it's senators or prime ministers or just our local politicians come to my house, you know, to meet with my dad, get advice. Sometimes they would take it, most times they would not. and I think being around that, you know, he was very adamant about this is not a profession I want to see either of you end up in, you know, for me and my sister. While I was interested in it and more in the people side of it, the people side of politics, that's what my master's really taught me, you know, the people side of business and doing business on a global scale.
Yeah.
You know, what flies in Brazil does not fly in the Netherlands and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I think learning that was one of my highlights then of my master's program. Then after I graduated, I moved back home, started working at Sonesta Maho Beach Resort and Casino. As a group sales manager, which brought me into the people aspect of business even further.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who's worked in hospitality will tell you that it it can be rewarding and stressful all at the same time.
Yeah.
So had a great time at Maho. And in 2009, I made a decision to move to the Netherlands just for a change of scenery. While there, I started working with TMF Group, which is a global trust and finance company. And
yeah, you would have to definitely, for those in the Netherlands, you're like, TMF? Isn't that the, music channel?
And yeah, when I lived there, I used to get out a lot. Like, I'm like, no, not the music.
You know what's funny? This is kind of what I love about these conversations, because you know things, you interact with people, but then you always get more in-depth details.
Yeah.
Because for the love of me... all these years, I thought that you studied in St. Thomas.
No. No. I was in Miami the whole time.
But that's the name of the school was St. Thomas. And I remember when you first mentioned that you're at TMF. Also, for a while, I thought it was the TMF music channel.
A lot of people did.
Until we had another conversation about that. And then I realized, oh, that's something else.
Yeah. A lot of people thought that. But
so that's two things, Melissa.
So it's no, but TMF was a trust and management and finance. Actually, it stands for trust management finance, and it was exciting to start there because.
So why? Because essentially those two things, aren't they a bit far apart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think with a study like international business,
yeah,
you could slot in kind of anywhere. And
you was also interested in tasting different things.
Exactly. Yeah. And getting to know different industries, different roles, you know, I feel like you can only ever keep learning.
Yeah.
And you gather, whether it's soft skills or hard skills, you gather that from every experience that you have. And when I started at TMF, it was at a very exciting time because I started in May 2010. And I think September that year, I got a call and it said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm at home. It was like a Thursday or so. And the person said, well, pack a bag because tomorrow we're going to London. I'm like, huh? So packed a bag, got put in, you know, a car picked me up, got to Schiphol. Went to London, early flight, didn't even get a chance to like have breakfast and stuff, touchdown. And I always tell this to people because they're like, oh, have you ever been to London? I'm like, I've been. Have I seen it? No. Because right when I got there, they sequestered myself and another colleague in a room and they said, you know, we've brought you here to help us with the communications planning for the merger of TMF and Equity Trust.
Mm.
And I was like, huh? And they're like, yeah, it's top secret. You can't tell anyone. This is it. Like the announcements, you got to hold it under wraps for like a month. But yeah, so I basically had to work with my colleagues and see how are we going to communicate this merger to over 60 offices worldwide.
Oh, wow.
Over 3,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why when people tell me like, oh, you know, communicating to large crowds is tough. I'm like, it's not tough. It's not tough at all. If you have a plan and you do it properly, you can do it.
So that's a key word. You need to have a plan.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Plan requires research.
Exactly. So
requires walk.
Yeah. And that was basically my, that was my first like, oh my gosh, experience. And you know, we it had a code name and everything. And I'm like, wow, I only see this in the movies, you know, like a whole thing, Project Blood. I'm like, whoa. And that was my first experience in high level corporate environments.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very thankful for that experience. And another thing that I did too, alongside being in TMF as an employee, is I joined the American Chamber of Commerce Young Professionals Group.
Mm.
And that helped expose me to even more high-level corporate environments like, you know, persons at Microsoft, persons at Google, LinkedIn, Amsterdam, Ernst & Young, you know, the big four in general, PwC, et cetera. So it was good to get that experience up there because even though I'm not a finance person, it's allowed me to, it's the one position I've held, I think, that has I've been able to translate into knowledge in parliament the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could imagine.
And then after, I think, 6 years in the Netherlands, I also co-founded USC, which was Unified St. Martin Connection, because I saw that's when the political bug started to kind of, hey, because when
are these people suffering?
When I moved up, the sentiment on St. Martin was very much that our students in Holland were lazy. They didn't want to work. They couldn't make up their minds what they wanted to be. They kept changing studies left and right because they just didn't care. They just wanted to be taken care of. That was the sentiment coming from, and I'll be honest, even from government workers, you know, from department heads that were like, no, they're spoiled. Meanwhile, when I'm up there and you know, my person I was living with at the time was a student. My sister was a student. A bunch of people around me, you know, were students, Jacques, Diane, etc. And hearing their issues and their struggles, like, okay, so the problem is here.
Total mismatch.
Yeah, the problem is here, you know. The experiences with guidance counselors who should be uplifting you and showing you the way forward, telling students you're never going to amount to anything and such. And I'm like, what is that?
Wow.
You know, I thought that was, I said that I couldn't believe that was happening on St. Martin. And that's when I realized that the problem really lies here, that there is no plan here.
Yeah. We come back to that plan.
that's gonna be the next tattoo. But basically, that kind of fueled a Facebook note that I wrote. And that was with the whole insurance debacle that happened, I think, from 2011.
Even I got hit with that thing and had to pay back some nice amount of euros.
Yeah. And it's really, again, it goes back to communication because, you know, that was a gross failure of communication.
Yeah.
Not informing students. And that's why I say you may think it's hard, but it's really not. Like, it as long as you commit yourself to just being open and transparent, you can communicate anything. And that kind of garnered some attention, most notably Edwina and Cyril. And, you know, through several Facebook messages, I said, you know, it is my vision to have something for Sint-Maarteners in Holland that they can come together, help each other, advise each other. Because, you know, I have cousins from Curaçao and Aruba, and they always had a hand to hold or like, hey, you know, can you help me with this or whatever. And I wanted us to have that as well. Even though I didn't go to school in the Netherlands, I realized that it's very different from the U.S. You know, in the U.S., it's the language is the same as what you speak back home.
Yep.
You live on campus. You know your meals are taken care of.
Yeah.
Even if it's trash food, at least you know where your meal is coming from.
Yeah.
In Holland, if you slip up and your budget goes out of whack or so, you eating some some Buddha yogurt and so and hoping for the best, you know. And so we, Cyril reached out and we said, you know, let's start this thing and let's get it going. And we collected some like-minded individuals along the way. And then something clicked in my head and I said, we could maybe go into politics. Like we're doing all right here. We could probably do this, you know, on a grander scale.
Yeah.
And that started laying the foundation for what eventually became the Party for Progress.
Yeah. Awesome.
And so, here we are.
Here we are. So again, it starts from this this need for wanting to help others.
Yeah.
And seeing that others are struggling and yeah, who is actually stepping up to help at that moment, and then stepping into that position to
yeah, it's something that, you know, aside from my dad instilling that in me. My grandmother, most definitely.
That's grandmother, you know, on mom's side?
My dad's
side,
yeah. Okay. You know, my grandmother on my mom's side, I never met her, unfortunately. She passed away when my mom was 18. And, you know, knowing at least two grandfathers, you know, and then my grandmother on my dad's side, that, you know, grandmothers are the matriarchs of the family. Like, that's
for sure.
That's it.
For sure.
So random people coming by saying hello. And for me as a kid, I was like, why are all these people interrupting my cartoon? I'm just trying to chill. My grandmother's made me pancakes. I'm just trying to relax. And she would say, no, I helped so-and-so with this and this. And, you know, yeah, they were down on their luck and such. And so she helped so many people that it kind of, and I always wondered like, why? And her mantra was, you know, if you take care of people, people will take care of you. And we all have to take care of each other. She is a small place.
Yeah.
And, you know, she used to say it a lot back then as well. She's like, this is a small place. Everybody knows everybody. Back then.
Now it's a little different.
Run away from us. But the sentiment of it being a small community still remains.
Yeah.
And she always felt that, you know, as long as the whole is moving forward.
Yeah.
Then it's fine. People, you know, for her, it was less about the me, more about the us. You know, the we, how do we move things forward?
Yeah.
And that was what powered USC, essentially. You know, our motto was moving forward together. And that has just trickled into what PFP is trying to accomplish as well.
What's kind of interesting is, as I'm hearing this, I'm also thinking about atoms, molecules, and organisms. For those that remember a bit of what they heard in chemistry class, and it's some terminology that we use in design as well. But when atoms come together, they form molecules. When molecules come together, they form organisms. But if an atom gets sick, that can then spread over to the molecules. The molecule spreads over to the organism, and then the whole thing dies.
Yeah.
So you need to take care of the whole in order for the whole, for the individuals to also move forward.
Exactly.
So, that was just a quick thing that came to mind as you were explaining
I understand it though.
The lessons of grandma. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and that's coming back home, you know, that was a planned timeline, mm-hmm. so to speak. I moved back home in 2016 and then started at UTS as a section manager for customer service, which was again taking me back to that experience of, you know, dealing with people, except now I was managing people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, managing personalities, anyone who's ever been like, there's a reason I tell people, you know, not everyone can be a manager.
That is very true.
Not everyone can be a CEO.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. I think, you know, it sounds tough to hear, but there's a reason there's studies for this, and that, mm-hmm. that people, you know, and sometimes even the study does not help because, you know, it's really something that intrinsically is a part of you.
Yeah. It needs to be part of your personality. Yes. And it's something that, some people along the way, they'll start to hit brick walls, exactly. even when they get into those positions.
Yes.
And it's also one of those things where you have to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what, this is maybe not for me.
Maybe not.
We also know that there's many people that unfortunately don't get to the point of looking in the mirror and accepting it's not for me.
They don't own a mirror, I think. I think at that point they don't own one. Because might not be. I don't know.
All right. They don't own a mirror. We'll go with that one. But yeah, it's definitely not an easy thing. I know for myself since I started my business and was a sole entrepreneur for the first like 5 years, from the very first moment that I started to hire real staff, things changed drastically.
Yeah.
And then there were many moments I had to look myself in the mirror and at some point also think like, okay, do I actually want this?
Yeah. Because
this is different.
Yeah, no, it's tough because I mean, you know, you learn very quickly where they say, don't expect everyone to work like you.
Yeah. Yeah,
100%. And that is the number one like piece of advice that I've taken, and that was told to me by my manager at Sonesta Maho, actually Bernard Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so frustrated. I was frustrated because people were not moving fast enough and such. And I said, you know, I just don't understand. It's so simple. And he's like, it's simple to
you. For
you. He says, a word of advice: do not expect people to work like you. And when you do find persons who can work like you, hold on to them like a bear.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very rare and few in between. And he said, you know, but he said that's the beauty of it. He said sometimes people like you need people to, hey, relax, take it easy, calm down. But then at the same time, people like that need someone like me to say, no, we got to get this done now.
And let's go.
Instill that sense of urgency, you know. So I think it's. And you have to learn a lot of patience as well to realize that. And especially when you work with older persons in this very technological world.
Yeah.
Like I've become, everywhere I go, I'm like tech support
for
persons who may not know, even in Parliament. Like I can tell you, so it's the funniest thing. But for me, I'm like, I'd rather people learn how to use the devices around them and, you know, that they can do it on their own, because that's also a sense of fulfillment that you get. You know,
So there's this, I'm not sure if it was Simon Sinek or one of these other guys, but there's this chart, right? So on one, let's see, that would be the y-axis. We have trust and trust core values. And then on the x-axis, we have skills/, what was the other one to drive it home? Skills/ performance. Mm. Okay, so y-axis, we have trust. Values. X-axis, we have skills performance, right? So it both starts at 0, goes up to 100.
Yeah.
So if someone has the right skills, And they're off on 50% plus on the chart, then they would end up in the C column, right? Now, if that person is also has the right core values and they generate the right amount of trust in the environment, then they would also go up on the y-axis, which puts them at A player level.
Right.
So now when you combine that trust and performance, A players.
Yeah.
Persons that are high in trust, but performance and skills are still in development would be considered B players because the trust is more valuable than the performance.
Yep. Yeah.
And I found that a super interesting chart. And so far in my career, I've seen it happen over and over again that C players can tend to be very dangerous because highly performing people that can't be trusted.
Yeah.
Are usually those that that can plant seeds of poison in a prosperous
in an organization.
Organization.
Yeah.
And if there's a low level of trust, a low level of skills and performance, sorry, D players, you're going home.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's interesting how you know. That's the way that it should be seen. But here, sometimes I think, you know, people, especially because it's a small community, it's tough to look at someone and be like, yo, nobody trusts you. Like, you don't have the ability. We don't ever want to say that. And I think, you know, that's actually very dangerous when you, you have a lot of persons here, in and out of government even, that treat the barest of minimums as a qualification for holding a role where you are literally deciding people's lives, like how the outcome of it, you know? And I think like the you do more damage to the country like that.
Yeah.
If that's how you function, whether it's in government, out of government, no private sector company tries to function like that. They don't try to, sometimes they do. Or whether it's a government-owned company or so, you see very much, well, so-and-so is from here, so they got to be qualified. And I'm like, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
That's not how any of this works. You know, and I really want us to get, that's my goal, that I would see us, like, move past that as being the only qualification that, that people can have.
It can be one of the qualifications.
Yeah, it can be one. It can be something that we use to as a metric to say, well, you know, the preference is here, but there's other factors that have to come into play.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when you look at anything that pertains to logistics, et cetera, you know, it is a study for a reason. You know, that there's reasons why people need to have the backing, the paper behind them to say that they are able to do this.
And I mean, even besides the paper, because that's one of the things that I also like to emphasize on, because I know here in the Caribbean, we put a whole lot of weight on the paper.
Oh, yeah.
But the experience, because you essentially with the paper, you had a bit of practical.
Yes.
But mainly theory.
Yes.
And now you have to go out in the real world and actually put this into practice. And usually as soon as you step out into the real world, you'll hit brick wall after brick wall. Yeah. And then you'll really see what you're made of if you can.
It's funny you say that because in the last campaign we had a leaders debate, the final leaders debate at Belia Community Center, and they were opening up the floor for questions from the audience, and the late Artelugis came and asked the question of, can't we do something where you have to have at least a master's degree or so to even put yourself on a list or be a minister, et cetera. And I thought it a little funny, you know, everyone kind of answered, well, democracy, you can't really restrict people like that and such. And when it came time for me to answer, I said, you know, I would say first to the average voter to look at somebody's character.
Yeah.
Look at how they've handled themselves in their professional life and sometimes even in their personal life.
Yeah.
You know, to see if they would be a good manager for this country, whether from parliament or whether from a ministerial seat. I said, you know, and as for degrees, a degree tells me you test well and you write papers well. Yep. I have a master's.
Yep.
I don't think I could be CEO of the airport, but you have a lot of people that don't have a master's that think they could. But I said, you know, so you have to look at people's character. I said, because we've had persons with master's degrees, even two of them,
mm-hmm.
and they've done very little,
yeah,
you know, when given the opportunity. And the stage and the audience was like, ooh, you know, like I had made some big diss and I wasn't targeting anybody in particular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's reality. Yeah. And I believe, I prefer to just speak the truth and just kind of say, well, this is what it is. You know, there's a lot of stock put into that. And it's one part of it.
It's one part of
but
it.
But there's so much more beyond that. And that is where the experience comes into play. And I think we also try, we don't like to understand that or hear that.
Yeah.
You know, we prefer to say, no, they have it. They from here. Let me go.
Yeah.
And I said, no, there's a whole other range of considerations to be made before you do something like that.
Yeah, it's way more like a spectrum or one of those one of those pie charts with all these different little sections. And some things maybe hold a bit more weight than others.
Exactly.
But the paper should definitely hold a particular amount of weight, but it can't be everything. The fact that you're from here should hold weight, can't be everything. But also your work experience in the different fields that you've operated in before, the way how you deal and potentially, well, that definitely should probably have had some type of managerial experience
that,
as well.
For sure,
you have to know.
And because we're a small island, you know, and it's not that hard. Like I said, the internet is there for everybody. It's very easy to see too how someone handled themselves in that professional experience, you know, because you're not going to hire somebody for a job in your company that has had issues with missing money at every job they've ever been at.
Okay, let's not...
I'm just saying. No, this is a general comment.
Okay,
no,
okay,
really.
Okay.
As a general comment, it's something to think about.
It's definitely something to think about. I feel we might be entering dangerous territory
No.
All right, Melissa, we'll move past that one.
We'll keep it general.
Okay. So, Party for Progress.
Yes.
So, as you walked in, I actually said, I want to applaud the fact that as a country, we have made it through a full term.
Mm-hmm.
That was a painful thing to see from a distance, sometimes up close, that for the first 10 years, but then again, I also heard a quote from someone, I can't remember who specifically, but essentially saying, well, the first 10 years we were basically a kid country, start from a baby and now a 10-year-old going into a teenager. So it takes time for these things to develop, stabilize. And I actually, part of the conversation that I had with Yorin was around the fact that when we made that switch in 10-10-10, a lot of those departments that were already established and running on Curacao, mm-hmm. basically overnight needed to be stomped out of the ground and created here on island. So any which way, that was a pretty huge task and a pretty huge undertaking. And then just within the 7 years of that undertaking, also having the worst and most devastating hurricane to pass on the island. So all in all, it was a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
And it is what it is for the past, but I'm super happy that we've made it this far. And let's continue with that energy that we can go through these proper 4-year cycles.
Yeah. It has been, you know, 4 years and
but for better or worse, you've been on the opposition.
Yeah, in the opposition benches, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for the first 2 years as well, I think we gave a lot of grace to this government. Because we understood, like, okay, you know, we're still dealing with the ramifications of Irma. Now we have COVID, you know, so let's see where we kind of can find our footing. So, it is stability. But I think in my closing speech for the closing of parliament, the parliamentary year, I said, you know, stability at what cost? Because there's still so much that has gone unaddressed, unattended, and at times it seems by design, you know? So I think, and if I listen to the sentiments of the, of people that just stopped me in the street, they kind of share that, where it's it's a general level of frustration.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that goes back to communication. And, you know, transparency is not just a buzzword.
Yeah.
It has to be something that you live all the time. And I think even in Parliament, you know, we've had the frustrating experience of being told that XYZ is this document is confidential, et cetera. And I'm like, why? It doesn't concern national security. There's no grand, you know, reveal of anything that that's happening there. So it's getting there, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
So so looking into the crystal ball of the future. Crystal ball. What would what would the preferable next steps look like?
Definitely for us to be in government. I think we made a conscious decision last election with just two seats to stay in opposition.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that was a wise decision made for the longevity of the party. I think with two seats, you know, you can kind of get bullied by the bigger party in whatever coalition that you're in. I still make the joke that there's only one person that I know that could stay in government through 3-4 cabinets with just two seats, and that's Sarah Westcott-Williams, and I'm not she. So that's not, you know, curious things. But I think, you know, for us now, having been in opposition benches, having done the research, having seen how things are going, you know, the decisions that have not been made, the steps that is, because it's a lot of difficult decisions that need to be made. And I think you have ministers who very often are very caught up in the vote and what happens with the vote. And I think when you have that, it's a recipe for disaster, because that means that you're not making decisions that are in the best interest of the country. You're making decisions or you're doing things that you know could probably get you reelected. And I think it's my firm belief then that we need to move away from that mentality. You need to come to a point where you have persons that say, look, this is the medicine is going to taste terrible, but the patient needs it to survive. And so, you know, you have to take it anyway and take the blows that come with it and just sail. That is what governance and leadership is about.
Yeah.
You know, the tough decisions are the rough waters, and it's either you're going to captain the ship through it or you're going to just cower in a corner and say, well, no, I want to remain captain.
Yeah.
You know, but there got to be a ship for you to remain captain anyway. And the way it's going, I don't know, you know, will there be a ship? But I think for us, having seen that now, the goal is, of course, to again, run as strong a campaign as we can, and ultimately, you know, let it be known that, yeah, our dance card is open, because it will end up being a coalition. That's the nature of this game.
Yeah.
We have not had an outright, since the 90s, we haven't had any outright winners, so to speak, in the full clear majority.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we're just going to see how the chips fall on January 11th. Yeah.
Hey, 2 days before my birthday.
Hey. Yeah.
Awesome. So that's a look into the crystal ball for the immediate future. Probably by the time this is airing.
Yeah.
We'll see. We would have known how the chips fell. So I wish you much success.
Thank you.
On January 11th. I can't vote. I'm in the Netherlands, but that is something actually that that is one of those little conundrums, right?
Yeah.
Where I know there's always a lot of talk of how do we get our young professionals, et cetera, to come back to the island and participate in the economy, help it grow, et cetera. And there's often the, how to put this, there's often the feeling or the sentiment that, well, what are we coming back exactly to, or what are we coming back for? And one of the aspects is also, well, from a distance, as much as you can maybe follow what's going on, you can't actively participate
right.
in deciding the who's going to captain the ship.
Yeah.
You play absolutely no role in that. And that's something that those, well, Dutch citizens living abroad, they do have that possibility mm-hmm. of participating in the parliamentary votes for, well, how do we call the Dutch elections again?
The Tweede Kamer.
The Tweede yeah. Kamer. Is it Tweede Kamer Stemmen or the?
Yeah, I just say elections.
All right, elections, yeah. elections for the Tweede Kamer.
Yeah.
So even if they're living in the United States, et cetera, they can still help determine the course of who's going to captain the ship yeah. of the Netherlands. But for those of us in the diaspora, we can't.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been a topic of discussion from even since I was living there, actually. And I think I had that talk with then Minister Plenipotentiary Josiane Fleming and a couple others where, you know, the trick of it is that voting is tied to citizenship and we don't have our own citizenship.
Mm.
So what I have always thought could work, and I don't want anybody to quote me on it, but I would say that especially if you're a student, you should be able to vote at the cabinet of the Minister Plenipotentiary with your SIMATNA ID.
Mm.
Why I say to students, I think after a certain amount of time, yeah, say it delicately.
Delicate.
People, what is your affinity, you know? Persons that have been, I know Simatnas that have been away living in the Netherlands for 20 years.
Oh.
25 years. No. But for me, I'm like, you know, the question then becomes, well, do you want to have that person is probably not coming back. You know, so do you want them to also have a say? And why I say that is because there is a Caribbean island, I'm not going to call names, where you're not allowed to take people off of the voter registry. So every election, this person has managed to stay in power by flying in those people for them to be able to vote.
Yeah.
And they've been away from this island for 20, 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
So they are now, and when speaking to young persons from this island, that's where I get the sentiment of, do you want persons who've been detached in a way for more than 2-3 decades to have a say when they won't be here to experience the results of the say?
The repercussions.
You understand? Yeah. Or the benefits or the consequences. Yeah. You understand? So that, I think, is the larger discussion that has to be held.
Yeah.
And of course, not many people want to have it, but I'm all about having sensitive discussions because it is a necessary one, you know?
It is definitely a necessary one. I fully understand that this is a pretty complex topic.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different perspectives on how you could look at it. And just as with anything in this world, it can be used for good or abused.
Yes.
It is an interesting perspective if you say that things could be potentially capped to student or student plus, and then there you would have to find where sort of that
I think
sweet spot is.
You could even say, you know, your because remember your ID has an expiration date as well.
Mm.
So it could be as long as your SIMATNA ID is valid, you could vote.
Yeah.
At the cabinet of the Minplen. But of course, that's part of the discussion that has to be had. But that was an idea that I had to kind of sidestep it's tied to citizenship. Well, yes, I get that. But, you know, if you are in the Netherlands, you know, you're living there or you're studying there and you have a valid SIMATNA ID, maybe it's an option coupled with, you know, your citizenship to be able to vote at Betty Hefman's office. But yeah, it's the larger discussion that has to happen, I think.
Because so those that go school in the States, for instance,
we don't have to write out.
And that, so those people get to come back and vote. Yeah. So again,
it was big business in the to fly down so and so child. Oh, so and so got 3 children studying in New York. Buy some plane tickets, fly them down. Yeah, that was the way. It was literally you were guaranteed a free trip home, basically.
Yeah,
it's that's how it goes sometimes. But for the States, you don't have to write out, you know. So that's where we're at.
Tricky situation.
It's tricky, but it's an interesting conversation to have, and I think it's definitely one that we will end up having to have, you know, sooner rather than later. I think for me personally, the focus has always been on the students, mainly because, you know, those are the ones that you know have a higher chance of coming back than the ones that have been there for 25 plus years.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the kind of the angle then that that I would take. But remains to be seen what is even possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The debate needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Melissa. Now we going back in the journey again, not as far back as little not as far back as a cradle or little Melissa watching the cartoons and grandma making pancakes, but 18-year-old Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
So with all the experience that you have today, and all of the knowledge, all of the good, the bad, and everything in between. What advice would you give to 18-year-old Melissa?
Oh, save your money. Learn earlier about investments.
Uh-huh.
Take out a life insurance policy on yourself the minute you get a job.
All right.
and learn how to leverage those, you know, as they mature and such. I think these are things that we don't talk about often enough.
Yeah.
And most definitely on the learn about investments more earlier, you know?
When did that journey start for you then?
I want to say round about the time I was turning 30.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that is...
And that was also around about the time you're at TMF?
Yes.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So that played a role, yeah. Right? Because around the trust,
listening
finance.
To everyone, yeah, being around in that environment, going to you know, events and stuff from the Young Professionals Group from the AmSham, you know, you hear about young people that have been, you know, preparing for their financial future,
yeah,
much earlier than we do, you know. I don't know if it's a cultural thing or so, but.
Isn't that, again, one of those sort of communication / knowledge things?
I think so. And I think it is, but I think it's also from a school perspective, it's not something that we're taught.
Yeah.
It is a complaint as well in the U.S. and everywhere that you know, well, we're not taught about these things in school, and we should be, especially when it comes to, for example, the policy situation. So when I first moved back, I was invited to a presentation at the time by Sagicor, because they had an endowment plan that you could take out on yourself basically and pay into with a maturity date 25 years down the line.
Okay.
So when I'm 58, you know. But there was a gentleman there who said, you know, he got into investing in these policies early, he said, you know, and when he was about 22, 23, and he was at the time of the session in 2016 in entering his 60s, and he'd already had 3 to 4 policies that had matured on him and that he'd reinvested into a different one. He built, you know, his house using some of those policies, used them as leverage to be able to take out loans, to be able to, you know, so he really did set himself and his family up as best he could. And this is a man who's not from St. Martin, but he was living on St. Martin when he was doing all of this.
Oh, okay.
And he said, you know, my son, his college was basically paid for by the time he turned 18. He was ready. It was there for him to the point where he even forgot he had a policy. And he was reminded of it when a family friend, the patriarch, passed away. And they used that maturing policy to help the family pay for the funeral. But a lot of people don't think about that either.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would also say, you know, start thinking about, you know, death.
Yeah.
In the sense of planning for whatever, your death, your parents' death, you know, get your papers in order. And I think that we don't have those conversations enough.
No, not at all.
For me, in my family, we do. Like, my dad has always been very, very upfront about, I'm not going to be here forever. Okay. But I think on a whole, I've heard too many horror stories of, you know, parents passing, nothing is arranged, nothing is in order. And it's one big bacchanal between siblings and such.
Yeah.
You know, there was a women's conference here about 2 weekends ago, and I attended one of the sessions that basically talked about family, well, you know, estate planning. And a lot of people were like, huh? Like, what? Like that? Like, a lot of people felt that because someone said, John, when I go, all of this is going to be yours. That constitutes a truth. And I'm like,
that's the will.
No, it does not constitute truth at all. And I think, you know, it's important to have those talks with yourself and with your family. So, 18-year-old Melissa would definitely save your money.
Save your money.
Yeah. The club will always
save,
be there.
Invest.
Save, invest. Party less. No.
Party less. Would you party less?
No. It was good times, but I think people don't calculate the sink that of the financial sink it can be when that is literally what you know. And I didn't even party that much. Like, I know people who've been partying since they were 15. I'm like, with what money, bro?
Exactly. So I actually started a personal finance course of I myself going down this rabbit hole in my early 30s, being like, why isn't there more right now?
Yeah.
And as you jump into the rabbit hole and you start digging, then a lot of things start to come up, and you really realize a lot of these conversations are not the type of conversations that we have. And especially living in the Netherlands and interacting with so many different cultures, and I've noticed in certain circles, those conversations are very normal. And in other circles, they're like
taboo, almost.
Practically non-existent. And it's definitely one of the things that I feel we need to have more conversations around. So maybe we might have to get back on just that topic alone a time to dive into those details. But on the life insurance policy side, there's obviously, it's a different dynamic here than it would be in the Netherlands. But when you took out those policies, maybe I'm getting into too much detail, so let me know if you want to choose not to answer. Was that in the Netherlands or here?
Here. When I came back home, that presentation I went to was right here.
Oh, that was here?
Yeah, okay. Right here. And I signed up for that endowment plan. And I said, well, you know, when I'm hitting that time of retirement, at least there would be something there coming in, you know? And I think I had something I was going to say about that.
Life insurance policy?
Yeah, so it's, they termed it an endowment plan, but essentially it is a policy. And it was only named that special thing because Sagicor was turning 75. So the special was when you signed up for this particular product, you would get 175% back instead of just 100%, you know, in terms of the payout.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, aside from the Party for Progress, we started a foundation called Projects for Progress. And actually, they had a very interesting workshop, I think last month, with Guardian Group on pensions and pension planning for retirement. And, you know, we had a lot of young people come out, and the feedback was amazing because they were like, I had no idea that this is what it was like. And I think that's also important, as we see that the social pension schemes throughout the Caribbean are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ours, I don't mince words, ours is struggling. Barbados and Grenada earlier this year had a whole to-do where they basically said, look, if things do not change drastically, which will lead to them increasing their retirement age, the pension schemes are going to collapse in 12 years' time.
Mm.
So they already know what they're staring down at the barrel, you know?
Yeah.
So here, it was good to have that session with Guardian Group to also talk to persons who can, you know, begin investing in their own private pension.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nothing is guaranteed.
I think for those that are, let's say, a bit in the know, and when I mean in the know, it's just those that spend a bit of time on their own research. It is pretty clear that around the world, it's looking pretty tricky for us millennials to retire in the same way as.
It's not gonna. It's looking pretty dire. Okay, it's looking. Let's not mince.
All right. I was trying to be nice.
No, look. When I was leaving the Netherlands, in 2016, that January, they had our pension fund come to TMF to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think I was probably the youngest in the room. 16 holds in 33. Yeah. Everybody in the room was like, am I going to be working till I'm 70? Because the presenter literally said, he said, you know, the pension age in the Netherlands is going up.
Yeah.
And it will go up again if life expectancy continues to be what it is, or if it continues to increase as it has been. And that's, I think, another conversation people don't like to have.
Yeah.
The fact of the longer people live, the more struggle the pension fund goes under. And it's tough to have that that discussion. But especially when you look at a population like the Netherlands, where it is aging.
Yeah.
Even Canada as well has complained that, you know, they have an aging population. You have people who, you know, are 99 years old in the Netherlands and are spry as a young chicken.
Yeah.
And then they have children who are pensioners who have been
now we got generations of pensioners.
you have generations of pensioners. Yeah. And you know, if you do your research, like you say, and you know how pensions work, you know that we are the ones footing that bill.
Yeah.
And those coming after us, I don't know. If the bill is going to be able to be foot.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely that's another thing I would tell 18-year-old and any 18-year-old listening to start thinking about how you're going to cushion your retirement.
Yeah.
Because if you don't want to be working until you're 70 or 75, who knows what it's going to be?
or till death,
and the other vow.
Yeah.
Then you really have to start making those preparations from now. And I know it sounds like boring and dramatic, because that's how I used to look at it too. Yeah. Like,
I got all the time in the world.
I'm gonna live forever. No. In the morning, my knees remind me, you're not gonna live forever. So you better start thinking about a freaking pension.
Exactly.
But no, definitely that's, and those are the types of conversations that we have to have, you know.
Yeah.
And I always try to have it in a gentle way, because I know I can be very like blunt when I communicate these things. And you know, it's, but that's the reality of it. And I don't believe in sugarcoating anything. You know, when we were voting to increase pension to 65, regionally, it was already 65. People acted like St. Martin was acting out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're not. We're actually behind.
Yeah.
You know, and now, like I said, you see the discussions in Barbados and Grenada that it might go to 67.
Mm.
Ours is probably going to go to 67 as well.
Yeah.
And that is the trade-off for longer living people, for good healthcare, keeping people alive, longer than the average human being would be there.
Yeah.
You have, I made a joke once with my grandfather before he passed. And he passed when he was 94.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a comment about young people, something ungrateful. And I'm like, sir. And then I said, I think he was 92 at the time. I said, you realize you've lived a lifetime after retirement? He's like, what? I'm like, you've pulled a lifetime out of pension. More than you've put in, sir. So whenever I ask you to, cover this or cover that, because we were living together at the time.
Yeah.
I said, that's me making you pay your dues.
Pay your dues, sir.
And he would laugh and he'd say, yeah, it's true.
Because technically, if... pension age was what when he retired? 60? So 60 to 94.
I feel 92. Like he wasn't working since he was 55.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so he lived the entire life, almost double the life that Tupac lived. In pension. Just to put it into perspective.
For the hip hop.
Yeah.
So you know. No, but that's and so we could have that conversation and it was a joke between us, but I can't, you can't tell, you know, a lot of people don't like to hear that.
It's
tough, but that's the reality, and I think admitting that and then finding ways to mitigate it is the only way that you can move forward. And one of the ways to mitigate it is, unfortunately, increasing the pension age to make sure that people are paying in longer than they're taking out.
Yeah.
And that's why I encourage everybody, you know, that workshop was very well attended. There will probably be another one. They even, Guardian Group even tossed in a you know, like, take it easy on how you how you say it? When you get married, you know, have conversations about finances.
Yeah.
When you get married, because when I think a lot of people found out in that room that when you, so you're married now and then you get divorced, if you haven't had that conversation, she went with 50% of your pension. But then if you get married again and you get divorced again, that one going with 25% of pension. So it just keeps distilling down.
Hey, for all our players out there, life can become rough, eh?
So yeah,
those conversations.
So I think having encouraging difficult conversations is something that I always say, you know, in Parliament.
Yeah.
Because as a country, you have to have those talks. If you have to have those talks as individuals with each other, it definitely has to happen on a country level as well.
Yeah.
You know, the difficult discussion of, can we do this? No, we can't. We need help. Like, all of that is tough. But you have to be transparent about it, and that's the only way that you're gonna change anything, really. Yeah.
Awesome. I think 18-year-old Melissa just got like a huge handful.
If only she got it at 18.
So all you 18-year-old Melissas and Marks out there. Take that advice and go start to do your research.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, awesome conversation.
Yes.
I enjoyed this very much. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
And here on our beautiful island, we 80s babies, St. Rose Hospital babies, chopping it up, having some good conversations. And so with this, I think any closing words, closing thoughts?
Just I think for people to remember that, you know, it really does boil down to communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, from a former student perspective, from someone who came back here, you know, to try to make a difference, sometimes it really does take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
I never say, oh, the day you graduate, get on the plane and come down. Make sure you graduate first.
Yeah.
And take that time to enjoy and to gain experience elsewhere.
Develop.
Because we don't need, what we need are, how do I say? We hear a lot, I think also in the Netherlands, you guys hear a lot about how we have a capacity issue.
Yeah.
But a capacity issue is not a body issue.
Yeah.
It's a...
Yeah, knowledge.
Peer issue. It's a knowledge issue.
Knowledge, experience.
That's capacity.
Yeah.
Three people could fulfill capacity of 10 better than 10 who don't have knowledge, basically. Yep.
100%.
And I think that's the, even when we were up in the Netherlands for IPCO last time, when I spoke to some students who came out and young professionals, I said, you know, don't feel pressure to just jump on a plane and come back here. Find ways to develop yourself, gain the experience you need, and find ways that you can translate it to what Simata needs. You know, I mentioned earlier that my experience at TMF has shaped how I argue and debate things in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that exposure to global finance, on a finance on a real global scale, you know, if we're talking China, you know, Russia, whoever, has allowed me to then kind of lend that knowledge in Parliament when you hear persons say incorrect things about anti-money laundering and those types of regulations, the CFATF, the FATF, you know, those are things that I already knew about. So none of it surprises me.
Yeah.
But it surprises some of my colleagues and it surprises some of the people. So I try to convey that knowledge to the people in a way that they can understand that this is the way that the world works. on a financial scale when you throw geopolitics and money into the mix. So I think that's my one closing thing I would like to say is that, you know, if you are seeking to come back to St. Martin and build your country, most definitely you are welcome.
Yeah.
But build yourself first.
Yeah.
And have a plan. For me, I was always going to spend at least 5 to 6 years in the Netherlands and then come back home. And I did exactly that. But that was my plan.
Yeah.
You can't just...
Oh, we're going back to that plan again.
You can't just decide on a whim because then you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
You really have to do your research even about your own home country because it's changed.
Yeah.
What what you left constantly is not what changing. You're coming back to. It's constantly changing. So do your research and find your niche. And hopefully we'll have made it easier for young entrepreneurs to get themselves set up and sorted here on St. Martin by then.
Awesome. Yeah. And those last words were so inspiring that it actually triggered one more thought. So I'll just place this cup right here. Mm. When it comes to self-development, well, the water here is done, but just imagine that we pour into this glass, we pull it nicely to the top. Only once you've gained a certain amount of experience, developed yourself on a certain level, would you then have enough for it to overflow into other cups?
Yeah.
And for you to continue to pour into yourself that you can overflow into other cups. So it's very important and vital for that to go through that self-development journey. And I do believe going through that journey from a distance also gives a lot of interesting and insightful perspectives.
Most definitely.
You can definitely go through that journey here on the island as well. But there's a lot more direct influences that may deter you from the self.
Yes. No, and you make a good point because it's like I said earlier, I didn't really get inspired to start something like USC and to start something like PFP until I was not here.
Yeah.
Because I needed to take myself out of the situation to see the situation from a different perspective.
Yeah.
You get that helicopter, bird's eye, whatever you want to call it, view. And then you're like, oh, that was the issue. Mm. And then it allows you to kind of pick and see. And then you're like, okay, this is where the thread starts. And this is where I have to start pulling and unraveling for it all to straighten out.
Yeah.
And that's really, really what it ended up being. Because you don't see it when you're in it.
No.
You really do have to step back sometimes and get perspective of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So we're going to
end on
that. Two sets
of closing words.
Once again, Melissa, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot,
this
man.
Was awesome.
For sure. Thank you for having me again.
And with that, we will be signing out. Please like and subscribe. We have more awesome stuff in store for you guys. I don't even have words right now anymore. I'm just zen. I'm at home. The view is beautiful. Awesome company. Thank you. We're out.